Today we have 18 bills to hear, only of which two are eligible for due pass motions. The remaining bills are suspense items. We will also have one bill that is still on the file that will go directly to the floor under 28.8 rule. That is measure SB 294 by Senator Pan. And again, since it's the new year, I'd like to reiterate our message to the audience and members that our testimony should be limited only to the fiscal aspects of the bill. Please refrain from lengthy policy discussions in your comments and testimony. Sergeants, can you please call the absent members so we can establish quorum? And we will begin as a subcommittee and allow for our members to present. I think we have Senator Block. Please come forward. Senator Block, you have SB 617, candidate for suspense. Floor is yours.
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I won't, as you ask, I won't get into policy considerations, but to just give a general overview of the bill. It's a bill that judges and prosecutors and others in the courtroom have been yearning for, because what it does is it reduces some very minor misdemeanors. It gives the potential for those to be heard as infractions instead of misdemeanors. And we're talking about cases like illegal lodging for folks who are homeless, who are now going through the criminal justice process. This will save them from the criminal justice process and let them elect to have their case heard as an infraction. For these infractions, these non-serious misdemeanors, there'll be a cap of fine of $250. And this bill excludes serious misdemeanors, including those involving sex crimes, child abuse, elder abuse, domestic violence, DUI, and any offense involving a firearm. It also excludes those offenses where a large fine is routinely imposed, such as employer workplace violations and environmental safety. Measure aims to focus our resources as a state on individuals who should be in the criminal justice system and to exclude those who can safely be held accountable for their offenses without incarceration. The person charged with an infraction will have a right to counsel if they're indigent at arraignment. Currently, they already have that right, so that way we don't see that as an extra expense to the state. If they're charged, if they have the counsel talk to them at the arraignment, if they choose, having consulted counsel, to move their case to an infraction, which is their choice, then there will no longer be any need for a public defender, and any further expense for a public defender will no longer be affecting the state's finances. If they do go on as misdemeanor, they will have the same right to counsel they already have, so there'll be no additional expense. Courts currently spend about $500 million a year to administer misdemeanors. According to the LAO, the average cost of processing a misdemeanor is about 10 times as much as the average cost for an infraction. According to the analysis, relying upon data from San Diego, the potential cost savings to the courts, DAs, public defenders, and county jails is in the millions of dollars. This is cost savings. There are 230,000 misdemeanor cases per year that could be eligible to be heard as infraction instead. For every 50,000 cases charged as an infraction, the potential saving to the courts are about $17.2 million. So if half of the 230,000 cases now charged as misdemeanors were charged as infraction, the savings to the state of California, the criminal justice system, would be approximately $31 million. So this does two things. On the policy side, it decriminalizes, or at least no longer puts people in the criminal justice system for infractions like what are now misdemeanors, like sleeping if you're homeless outside. But importantly for this committee, it has huge potential cost savings for the state of California and the criminal justice system. It's sponsored by the San Diego District Attorney, Bonnie Dumanis, and is supported by the County of San Diego. And here with me today is Rachel Solov, the Deputy District Attorney from San Diego's DA's office, to testify in support and answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Witnesses in support.
Thank you. As Senator Block said, my name is Rachel Solov. I am the division chief of the Collaborative Courts and Realignment Unit in the San Diego County District Attorney's Office. We are also charged with implementing Proposition 47. A couple points that I'd like to address on the fiscal side of this bill. The issue with the fines, while a misdemeanor carries a potential for a $1,000 fine, in practice, in my 17 years as a district attorney, the standard fine for a misdemeanor is $200, which is what the court actually imposes. So even though the court has the ability to impose $1,000, the standard fine on these types of crimes is $200. So that's actually lower than what we've capped it at here. So the fine limit decrease should not result in a big difference to revenues. And again, you also have to factor in how much of these revenues are actually collected. And in fact, limiting these fines may help some people get out from underneath of these heavy fines when we're talking about minor offenses. Also, as opposed to misdemeanors or felonies, a person charged with an infraction cannot be put in jail on that infraction for failure to pay a fine. So I think that's important to note. The analysis noted something about the potential for altering court processes. It should not alter court process significantly at all. In fact, in San Diego County right now, if you are charged with an infraction, you actually do still come to court and have an arraignment. So you're still having that court appearance. So this would not change that. The issue of counsel at arraignment, if these were filed as misdemeanors under the law as it is right now, indigent defendants would have the right to an attorney under the Constitution at arraignment. So we are not incurring any additional expenses with this law that the system is not already undertaking. However, if they proceed as an infraction after that, they would no longer have that right to court-appointed attorney, and that would save us money. While there are some costs associated with this bill, the net savings would outweigh those costs. As the analyst noted, the cost to administer an infraction are much lower than a misdemeanor. One example, a practical example, what we see even on these misdemeanors, someone who is sentenced on a misdemeanor is typically placed on summary probation to the court for 1 to 3 years. What that means is for that entire period of time, there's a court file that is active and open and sitting and taking up space in the court offices. Anytime that offender then re-offends on any offense or anything happens and they're brought back before the court, that file on that small misdemeanor has to be pulled, and the court clerks have to do minute orders, and all of that takes time and money. This would save money in that sense. I crunched some numbers very quickly on these cases in San Diego County. In 2015 alone, 12,812 defendants pled guilty to misdemeanors that had less than a six-month sentence. So let's say that this law is only used in 30% of those cases that are eligible. When you use the average court administrative costs that the analyst report notes, you have a cost of $134,575 versus $1.461 million. So just in 1 year, if 30% of these cases this law was applied to, you have a savings of $1.3 million in San Diego County. So while there may be some costs, this bill just makes sense. It will give us the ability to get these low-risk, low-needs people out of the criminal justice system and focus our time and energy and resources on the high-risk needs population that Proposition 47 has left us to deal with in the misdemeanor population. So I would urge you to keep this bill moving forward. Thank you.
Additional witnesses in support, please come forward.
Andrew Langley on behalf of the County of San Diego in support. Thank you.
The additional witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. No witnesses in opposition. Any questions from committee? Where's the department? Yeah, where is the Department of Finance? Oh, there. Okay. I'm used to see. Department of Finance.
Matt Almey, Department of Finance, no file.
Before we move forward, we do have a quorum. I want to make sure we establish that. Secretary, please call the roll.
Laura?
Here.
Laura, here. Bates?
Here.
Bates, here. Bell? Hill?
Here.
Hill, here. Leyva? Mendoza?
Here.
Mendoza, here. Nielsen?
Any questions or comments from committee? Hearing and hearing none. Senator Block, would you like to close?
We just urge this move off of suspense.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to suspense file. Thank you. Next, we have Senator Liu. Senator Liu, you have one item, SB 547. Feel free to start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. 20% of California's population will be 65 years or older by 2030. And SB 547 is an effort to respond to this silver tsunami before it reaches crisis proportions. My bill derives from the Senate Select Committee on Aging and Long-Term Care's final report, and its purpose is to better organize and coordinate administration and delivery of aging and long-term care services and supports statewide. It does three things. It charges the Secretary of Health and Human Services with responsibility for coordinating aging and long-term care policies and programs within the agencies and across all state agencies and departments. It creates an Aging and Long-Term Care Services Coordinating Council, chaired by the Secretary with membership from other agencies and departments with relevant programs. And it requires the Council to develop a statewide long-term care plan with clear benchmarks and timelines to serve as a blueprint for meeting the needs of the aging population while maximizing the use of limited resources. The bill also provides for the state to assume support for the consumer information portal, calqualitycare.org, now operated by UCSF. Providing better information is now more important than ever. The End of Life Option Act of 2015 provides that people choose to end their lives must have access to and the opportunity to consider information about other end-of-life options available to them. In our current fragmented system, they do not. The chart I provided you provides and illustrates my point. We have 112 programs administered by 20 different agencies, offices, and departments. The system is unnavigable. This cost is pegged at about $1.4 to $1.9 million in its first year and $575,000 every year thereafter. Frankly, I consider this a small amount of money to pay now to avert a crisis that can cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars in the future. Nonetheless, we are working with your committee consultant on amendments to reduce the cost of the bill and hope you will release it from suspense on Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon Lou. Any witnesses in support of the measure?
No.
Witnesses in opposition? Finance.
We have an opposed position on this bill because it results in increased general fund costs and the goals of the bill can be accomplished administratively. We estimate the cost to operate the calqualitycare.org website would be $400,000 general fund annually.
Questions or comments from committee? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Liu, would you like to close?
Well, I respectfully ask for your support on this bill.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Liu. Next, we have Senator Pan. Senator Pan, you have one item, SB 563.
Yes.
Please feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present to you SB 563. SB 563 prohibits utilization review organizations from offering or providing reviewers any financial incentive or consideration based on the number of UR modifications, delays, or denials of treatment requests. Of course, concern is whether some reviewers may be compensated based on the amount of savings they acquire for their payer. Such incentives could conflict with the reviewer's actual professional judgment. While there is agreement among most that such an incentive is unacceptable, there's currently no explicit prohibition in statute ensuring it cannot occur. Therefore, recent amendments narrow this bill to simply codify this prohibition and the ability of the Division of Workers' Compensation to enforce it. This bill and their ability to enforce it is necessary to ensure that injured workers are appropriately receiving necessary medical care and that money that is being spent appropriately and efficiently to our workers in our workers' compensation system. I want to thank the Department of Industrial Relations and various stakeholders for working with us on this issue and also note my commitment to work with the employer community on language addressing their concern related to ensuring confidentiality of proprietary information now able to be reviewed by the division going forward. And I'd like to have as a witness Amy Durbin from CMA, the sponsor of the bill.
Thank you. Witnesses in support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Amy Durbin with the California Medical Association. We continue to hear from our physician members about challenges in the workers' compensation system, raising concern as to whether processes may actually incentivize and allow for the denial of necessary patient care, in addition to increasing frictional costs in the system with administrative expenses set to outpace others. SB 563 is necessary to bring more accountability and transparency to these processes and costs within utilization review. Ensuring the administrative director can enforce it ensures injured workers are not subject to poor payer practices and that they receive necessary and timely access to care. Thank you, and respectfully ask for your vote.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Mitch Seaman with California Labor Federation, also here in strong support. As mentioned, we do see this as a big step in the right direction to help reduce unnecessary frictional costs in the workers' comp system, and we urge your support.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Megan Brightwell on behalf of the California Professional Firefighters, pleased to be in support.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. We estimate $600,000 of special fund costs for the Department of Industrial Relations to cover additional audit and legal workload.
Thank you. Comments or questions from committee? Senator Bates.
Senator Pan, understanding that you're looking to amend it to address the concern on, I think, the confidentiality, do you have those in print? I just got my book, so I haven't looked through it there.
Okay, I'm gonna have.
Yeah, could you respond to that? Just regarding what amendments you're looking at, I guess is a simpler.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Senator Bates. Yes, so we're working with the stakeholders on that language. I believe the department's actually drafting it right now. We haven't seen it yet, but we've committed to working out the issue. Our intent was never to allow proprietary information to somehow get publicly released, so we're gonna address that issue and working on language as we speak.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Additional comments or questions from committee? Seeing here none, Senator Pan, would you like to close?
Well, again, this bill is a good step forward to ensure the protection of injured workers and tracking the money being spent in our workers' compensation system. I especially ask for your support and for SB 563 when it's time to take it off the suspense file. Thank you.
Thank you. Without objection, we.
Oh. Mr. Chair,
absolutely, Senator Deva.
I just wanted to say that I think this is a terrific bill. Having spent many years dealing with the issues related to workers' comp, and it's usually the injured worker who doesn't get what they need, and just want to thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Pan.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson, you have one item, SB 514. Please feel free to begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill simply requires that the California Health Benefits Exchange cover California to allow an applicant to indicate whether they would like assistance in completing an application. Since we started this bill, Cover California has said that this is part of their goal. I believe it's a candidate not to go into suspense because they are simply codifying what they intend to accomplish. For those reasons, I'd like to ask that it be voted on and not go to suspense.
Additional witnesses in support of the measure. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
No file.
Thank you. Comments or questions from committee? Seeing none, Senator Anderson, would you like to close?
Thank you for your kind consideration.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. Members, since Senator Leyva.
Yes, we just need that.
Absolutely. Senator Leyva, you have two items. SB 66 enjoys a due pass recommendation. We'll begin with that item. And my understanding is you are waiving presentation on 384.
That is correct.
Correct. So, members, this is SB 66. Senator Leyva, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. Senate Bill 66 aims to streamline and improve career technical education programs at the California community colleges by improving data collection and updating reporting requirements. In 2014, the California Community College Board of Governors commissioned the task force on workforce, job creation, and a strong economy. The task force, consisting of representatives from community colleges, the business community, labor groups, public agencies involved in workforce training, K through 12 policymakers, and community-based organizations, spent an entire year convening town halls and regional group meetings to develop policy recommendations designed to improve career technical education in our community college system. SB 666 aims to address two of these recommendations that require legislative fixes. Specifically, first, require the California Department of Consumer Affairs to make licensure information available to the California Community College Chancellor's Office for the purposes of matching students and evaluating the outcomes of career technical education programs, making sure they get what they're being told they're getting. Second, align state accountability reporting requirements with the Federal Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act to remove reporting inefficiencies for programs receiving multiple sources of funding. At the request of Senator Liu and Senate Education Committee, I agreed to remove a third provision of the bill relating to the Cal Grant C awards. I will continue to work with Senator Liu and the Education Committee and Appropriations Committee to address the concerns surrounding this issue. I also look forward to working with the governor and legislative leaders to maintain the $200 million allotted in the 2016-2017 budget proposal for the implementation of the task force recommendations. I have a representative from the California Community College Chancellor's Office here with me in support of the bill in case you have any technical questions.
Thank you. Witnesses in support.
Good afternoon. Raul Rambula from the California Community College Chancellor's Office. We're sponsors of the bill. And regarding the financial, since the bill is to eliminate any duplicative reporting, our costs will be minor and absorbable for our office. So we just ask for a aye vote.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in support. Please come forward.
Thank you. Mark McDonald, McCallum Group, on behalf of the Los Rios, San Bernardino, San Diego, and South Orange County Community College Districts in support. I think your analysis does a great job from the local perspective. This would help us streamline our reporting and would actually lead to cost savings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mira Morton here on behalf of the California Chamber of Commerce. We were pleased to participate in the task force, and we're pleased to support this common sense reform. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. Estimate cost of $100,000 from various special funds for the Department of Consumer Affairs to create an information sharing interface.
Thank you. Comments or questions from committee? There's a motion by Senator Bates. Secretary, please call the roll.
Laura?
Aye.
Laura? Aye. Bates? Aye. Bates? Aye. Bell? Hill? Hill, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mendoza? Nielsen?
Thank you. We're going to leave that item on call and let absent members add on. Next, we have Senator Hill. Administrator, you're presenting for Senator Wesso? Perfect. We have Senator Hill will be presenting for Senator Wesso's item SB 745. It also enjoys a due pass recommendation. Senator Hill, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. SB 745 is a bill to require the California Public Utilities Commission to provide additional information in its annual report to the legislature of the California Advanced Services Fund, CASF, including county-level data and efforts to leverage other resources. It also, this bill also does something that I think is very helpful, and I appreciate Senator Wesso's leadership in it. It also provides for the explicit inclusion of workforce organization representatives in regional consortia. The California Advanced Services Fund is a universal service program to encourage deployment of broadband services to all Californians that will promote economic growth, job creation, and substantial social benefits of advanced information and communications technologies. The CASF provides grants to bridge the digital divide in unserved and underserved areas in the state, providing both infrastructure grants for capital costs and grants for education and outreach through regional consortia. As was cited in the CPUC's most recent report, April of 2014, of the CASF program, there is a need to explore leveraging non-CASF resources. This bill will ensure that the CPUC
annual report of the program provides the information about the efforts and activities to leverage those resources, be they federal, private, local funds, or others. The bill is a simple solution in statute to ensure the legislature receives helpful information about the state's efforts to address the digital divide, which can help shape the and inform our policy efforts as we move forward.
Thank you, Senator Hill. Any witnesses in support? Witnesses in opposition? Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. We estimate a cost of $131,000 California Advanced Services Fund for the PUC to comply with the new reporting requirements.
Thank you. Comments or questions from committee? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Hill, would you like to close for Senator West?
We ask for your aye vote today. Thank you.
Thank you. This does have a two-pass recommendation. Senator Leyva moves the item. Secretary, please call the roll.
The motion is due pass to the Senate floor. Lara?
Aye.
Lara, aye. Bates?
Aye.
Bates, aye. Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye. Hill?
Aye.
Hill, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mendoza? Nielsen?
We'll hold that item to allow absent members to add on. Thank you, Senator Hill, for presenting for Mr. Wesso. Senator Bell, would you like to introduce, present your bill? This is SB 378 by Senator Bell 2.0. Looking very good. Senator Bell, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, members and Mr. Chair. It's my pleasure to present to you SB 378. This is a bill that allows seniors and people with disabilities to transfer their property tax basis from their original home to a new home that has a higher price. To ensure a homeowner doesn't receive more of a tax benefit, however, these bills require that the difference between the value of the replacement home and that of the original residence is added to the base of the year assessed value. With regards to the cost of the bill, California does not engage in a dynamic scoring and fails to take into account the secondary impacts of this bill. Families purchasing homes being vacated would then be reassessed. The home would then be reassessed, and due to the increase in the housing market, be assessed at a higher value. By freeing up homes that would not otherwise enter the real estate market, this bill would be a financial wash and would generate even more property taxes for counties and cities. This bill would help seniors downsize to a newer, smaller home that is more appropriate for their needs and result in more homes for young families to move into. The bill would allow a senior to utilize the tax savings resulting from the change for their retirement. I respectfully ask for an aye vote, and we have witnesses, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Is in support.
Christopher Carlisle with the California Association of Realtors, the sponsor of this measure. And I just want to expand upon this dynamic scoring issue that the senator touched on. Let me take the simplest example. You got two homes purchased in 1985 for $100,000. They're both $100,000. The revenue to the government is $1,000 on each of those homes. Prop 13 caps property taxes at 1% of the assessed value. 30 years later, 2015, those homes are still valued at, are now valued at $200,000, but revenue to government is still $2,000, $1,000 on each of those. If that one of those homeowners sells his home for $200,000 and moves to the home next door, as far as CSAC is concerned, that's a loss of $1,000 because that home is valued at $200,000 and should be taxed at that. But we, in the late 1980s, the voters said, no, we're going to let seniors make that kind of transfer. So they continue to pay the $1,000. But on the home that's been vacated, those taxes are now going to go from being based on $100,000 to being based on $200,000. So now government is getting $2,000 from that. So there's a net increase in revenue from the $2,000 that the two homes were previously generating to $3,000. The $1,000 that the senior that transfers is allowed to do, and the increase on the original residence to $2,000. That's a net gain. So We resist the suggestion on CSEC's part that this will cost government money. In fact, it will allow the transfers that the senator is seeking to allow seniors to make so they can downsize. It will increase affordable housing stock, and it will not decrease revenue to government.
Additional witnesses in support, please come forward. Witnesses in opposition.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Dorothy Holzen with the California State Association of Counties, and we have an opposed unless amended position on this measure, and we can appreciate the analysis noting how complex and complicated the finances of this bill are, and we agree that in some instances, and there are opportunities for gains, but there are also gains, or also opportunities for losses for counties, schools, special districts, and cities. And we don't take that lightly. And that's why we are suggesting that rather than do a statewide approach, we allow counties to adopt the expansion of the base year value transfer as they best see fit. We feel that they are in the best position to make this budget decision, and therefore we are requesting that this bill be narrowed to allow a county decision to apply the provisions of SB 378. Thank you.
Witnesses in opposition.
Lenny Goldberg, California Tax Reform Association. This is definitely a loss because when we did Prop 6090, which was a bunch of years ago, the idea was that the senior on a fixed income, this is who is supposed to benefit, would move to a lesser home, but let's say their house sold for $800,000, they were taxed at $200,000, and they bought a home for $500,000. Well, they would have to pay an increased property tax. So we all said seniors buying a lesser home for the same or lesser money should be allowed to take their property tax base with them, and then their more expensive home would sell on the market. What this does is allow me, as a well-off senior who's gotten fabulous benefits from Prop 13, to take my low property tax base and go into the market and outbid those families that are looking for housing. In other words, it gives, this is not a case where you're talking about a fixed income because you are assuming a larger property tax by a small amount, and you're assuming either pay down your capital into buying a more expensive house. So this only benefits people who've gotten fabulous benefits from Prop 13 all these years in the housing market to compete with the families that are looking for housing. So it does the exact opposite of what Prop 6090 did, which was to encourage us to move to lesser value, smaller homes, and this does not do that.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. Initial property tax revenue losses for K-14 schools are estimated to be at least $3.5 million per year, which would drive a corresponding increase in the state's annual Prop 98 general fund costs. We estimate that these annual costs will grow as the number of eligible claimants increases.
Thank you. Comments or questions from committee? Senator Leyva.
Senator Bell, am I understanding correctly what you're saying is this will help seniors who purchase a home, they'll be able to take the lower tax base with them
yes.
to the new home? Okay. So there may be a few very well-off seniors that don't need this, but most seniors that I know are struggling. And as we see pensions go down and whatnot, they don't necessarily have the money to pay extras. So this will help them stay in a home.
Well, I think the purpose of the bill is actually to help those seniors that have an asset, but mm-hmm. that asset is kind of tied up, and they have maybe they could be somebody that has a very small pension, but own a home, and they want to move out of that home and have. A different type of home that's maybe less expensive for them to operate and so forth, and use that asset in a different way. And therefore, in essence, I think save themselves some money and use the savings for their retirement purposes. And I know that we all know that we're facing what I call a senior tsunami. It's coming. There's going to be a lot of us seniors coming up into the future. And when you look at the statistics, especially after the last 10 years, a lot of those seniors lost their pension assets. And when they lose their pension assets and there's nothing to replace those pension assets other than their home, we ought to give them the flexibility and opportunity to convert that home into some decent retirement savings. And I think that's the purpose of this bill. I think I would urge the revenue forecasting to look at the sale of the original home. It is going to, if the whole purpose of this bill is to get somebody to sell a home, that should be looked at as a tax increase because the new buyer will have to have that home based on the selling price of the home, and the tax assessment will actually be based on the buying purchase price of the home, and that would increase taxes that go to local government. When they do the analysis, they don't look at that. They don't look at that number. But it actually, this whole legislation doesn't even have any kind of use unless the person sells their home. So it is an advantage for seniors, and I would urge an aye vote.
Senator Bell, I have a question. So my understanding is, okay, we're trying to help seniors on fixed incomes, but if they buy a more expensive home, they're going to pay a larger house payment, correct?
They take the asset of their current home and apply it to buy the new home. So the equity that they have.
Okay, the equity part.
So, yeah. Well,
I'm still trying to figure out how it actually helps seniors on fixed incomes, because we're protecting, if they buy a home of lesser value, then I see that they're protected. But if not, they're gonna pay more. I mean, can you explain to me how they won't be able to pay more if they buy on a more expensive house?
Right. What we're finding is that if you go into any zip code and you find a $3,000 home that was built in '85, you can find a 2,000 foot home that was built in the last couple of years, and it's going to cost more. So even if you're going to a smaller home, albeit newer, it's going to cost more just because the market has moved away from you over the years, and your present asset isn't going to be able to allow you to, for example, buy a bigger home. It just isn't. The market doesn't operate that way. If you want to go to a bigger, newer home, it's going to cost you more. What we're finding is that more often than not, it can cost you more to downsize. You know, a lot of these seniors want to go to a single-level story. They don't want to be going up and downstairs and that sort of thing. And there are, you know, going to be costs associated with, as we get older, with the wheelchair ramps, the shower safety bars and all of that. That's where the seniors are going to be spending their money, not in bidding up home prices, looking for even bigger homes. You know, I'm a perfect example of that. My girlfriend and I live in a 2,000-square-foot home. My kids have moved out. It would be a perfect home for a family just starting out to move into. There are a bunch of empty bedrooms there. And that's what we need to be making available to young families just starting out.
Okay. I have more questions. As this spills in suspense, I want to further clarify some of these issues that I have. Any other questions from committee members? Great. Thank you, Senator Bell. Would you like to close?
Yes, I urge an aye vote. I also wanted to point out that this establishes a consistent rule for seniors. We got to keep the rules simple for seniors and other people that want to do this kind of effort. I think it's very important that we keep the rules simple. We don't need 58 counties having different rules. As a county supervisor, when I heard that, I was like, okay, everybody has their own option. Come on. That'll be 58 different rules, and I think that would be a very confusing type of government. We don't need that. We want simple rules. This should be simple. It helps seniors. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. That concludes the presentations for today. As customary in the Senate appropriations hearings, we are going to bring up the items that members have waived presentation to allow members of the public and finance to state their positions. We're going to go down our agenda order, beginning with Senator Hill's items. He's got several, beginning with SB 24. Witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
No file.
No file. Without objection, we will move this item to the suspense item. Suspense file. Next is SB 512. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
No file.
No file. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. Moving on to SB 661. Witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
No file.
Without objection, we move this item to a suspense file. Moving on to SB 678. Witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We have an opposed position on this bill. We estimate that initial property tax revenue losses for K-14 schools of at least $170,000 per year, which will generally drive a corresponding increase in the state's annual Prop 98 general fund costs. We estimate this annual cost will grow in future years based on the growth in property values and increases in the number of eligible claimants.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to suspense file. SB 681, witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. Assuming 500,000 violations caught by cameras annually, and that half of these violations are of this type, are of the type that this measure would address, the total revenue loss would be $46 million annually. The state would lose at least $20.4 million, and affected local governments would lose at least $25.7 million.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. Moving on to Senator Leyva's item, SB 384. Witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. Costs are anticipated to be funded by existing bond proceeds through the Housing for Veterans Fund, specifically set aside for administering the program.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. Moving on to Senator Leno's item, SB 215. Witnesses in support.
Eddie Moreno on behalf of Sierra Club California in support.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
No file.
No file. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. Moving on to SB 247. Witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Finance.
We have a neutral position on this bill, minor cost to the CHP.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to suspense file. Moving on to Senator Bates' item, SB 259. Witnesses in support. Witnesses in opposition. Please come forward.
Lenny Goldberg, California Tax Reform Association. This bill really makes things worse in a messed up situation on change of ownership. We've worked on this issue for many years, and it actually opens some new loopholes and doesn't. We appreciate the committee analysis, which actually says we don't expect the money because the loopholes still exist.
Is in opposition.
Mr. Chairman, Senators Terry Brennan on behalf of SEIU California. This is a problem we're tackling. It's a multi-billion dollar problem. We applaud the attention to it, but a bill that creates a $26 million revenue source with a much more complicated loophole, we can't support, so we're opposed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, Jai Sukhprasad with the California School Employees Association, also in opposition for the aforementioned reasons.
Estelle Lemieux with the California Teachers Association. We too oppose this measure for the very same reasons. Thank you.
Thank you.
Megan Brightwell on behalf of the California Professional Firefighters, respectfully in opposition.
Joshua Golka with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also in opposition.
Thank you. Additional witnesses in opposition. Seeing none, finance.
No file.
No file on this item. Without objection, we move this item to a suspense file. Moving on, if I'm correct, to Senator Wolk. Her item is SB 554. Witnesses in support, please come forward. Witnesses in opposition? Finance.
We do not have a position on this bill. Based on annual, we estimate annual costs of $6 to $12 million a year that would be available with existing bond funding over the next 5 to 10 years.
Thank you. Without objection, we move this item to the suspense file. Members, we have a couple items open. So we want to make sure every member has an opportunity to vote on the open items. So we'll begin with SB 66 by Senator Leyva. Secretary, please call the roll.
The motion is due pass to the Senate floor. Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye. Mendoza?
Aye.
Mendoza, aye. Nielsen?
Aye.
Nielsen, aye.
7-0.
7-0, that measure is out. Moving on to file item, item SB 745 by Assemblymember Wesso. Secretary, please call the absent members.
The motion is due pass to the Senate floor. Mendoza?
Aye.
Mendoza, aye. Nielsen?
Aye.
Nielsen, aye.
7-0.
7-0, that item is out. That concludes our open items, member, and concludes our appropriations hearing for today. Thank you for being here.